Sandra, after getting a call from Iker Jimenez's legal team.
That's right.
We no longer call this section Quinto Milenio.
It's too bad. But you know what? I'm happy with the change. History's biggest mysteries. It's got a ring to it.
It really does.
Suena bien. See?
Remillo. Sandra, today, Europe's biggest mysteries.
And I'm living a celebration because the first one's actually in Spain.
Wow.
So in Jaén, to be more precise, 1971.
I'm not afraid to tell you, Senna, that's the year I was born.
So that was a long, long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Small little village of Belmez de la Moraleda in Jaén. María Pereira claimed that a human face, so una cara humana, spontaneously appeared on her cement kitchen floor.
So to claim, remember, is not reclamar. It's more like alegar or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
Exactly. So, you know, it kind of freaked her out. Le dio un poco de mal yuyu.
Lógicamente.
Yes. And she destroyed the floor and replaced it. So lo reemplazó, cambió el suelo. And you know what happened?
What?
A new face quickly appeared. Wow. So volvió a aparecer otra cara. So this wasn't the only face. More and more faces continued to appear on the floor of María Pereira's kitchen. And you know what? This word got out. So la gente se empezó a enterar. And thousands of visitors went to her house every day to see these faces.
Thousands? Wow.
So it says thousands of visitors every day. So some of the faces were male. Some of them were female. So remember, male is macho. Female is hembra. So caras de mujer, caras de hombre. Some were large. Some were small. And, well, in time, you know, they said, why is this happening? What's going on here? Well, ooh, Colby is showing me images of the faces. Ooh, they're spooky looking. Very different. So some were, well, they found out that the house was built around 1830. And it stood above a graveyard. So habían construido la casa sobre un cementerio that had been used by Romans, Spanish Muslims, and then medieval Christians. So un cementerio que había sido utilizado por romanos, musulmanes españoles y cristianos medievales.
So she was encima de la convivencia, really.
Exactly, basically. So people say, ah, María Pereira must have just painted these faces herself. Well, Colby, if she did, she never benefited financially from all the attention. So I said thousands of people went to visit.
She could have charged them like a couple 10 pesetas each or something like that.
She could have, but she didn't. So no cobró a la gente que venía a verla. And she lived a very simple life in that same house. Colby, she died in 2004. Well, paranormal fans think that these faces were manifested on the floor. So esta es la famosa palabra estas caras aparecían en el suelo. So to manifest is como aparecer de repente by telekinesis. I can't say that
telekinesis
word. Thank you. So telekinesis in Spanish, telekinesis in English. And they say that the expressions on the faces would change with the mood of María Pereira.
So su rostro cambiaba con el humor de Pereira.
Sí, el estado de humor de María afectaba las expresiones de la cara. But scientists found it possible to analyze the molecular changes in the whitewash. So the whitewash es ese blanqueo que se usa para pintar las casas en Andalucía. And they claim that there was some fakery.
So to fake is?
To fake is como hacer algo de mentira, una imitación.
Sí, exactly.
So a fake diamond sería un diamante falso. And they believe, so none of this is completely proven, Colby. Hay gente que cree, so they believe, some people believe, that the paintings were actually created by Maria's son, Diego Pereira, using chemical compounds, usando compuestos químicos. But nobody's been able to completely prove that either.
They did some studies and they found some compounds that could maybe cause this. And then they found those compounds for sale at the local drug store. So they think that they might have faked this. But again, as you said, there's no definitive proof one way or the other.
And nobody made any money off it, so why would they bother? Porque se molestarían. Interesting.
One of Europe's biggest mysteries is the Count of Saint Germain.
Oh.
All right, not to be confused with the actual Saint Germain.
Okay, so
a Parisian bishop.
All right, so el Conde de Saint Germain.
Well, what's so mysterious about the Count of Saint Germain? Well, some people think he has lived forever.
Like Dracula? So piensan que vive desde siempre.
That's kind of where the theory goes, is that he might be a vampire. His
really?
Origins are unclear, and his records, birth records, date his birth to the late 1600s, although some believe he may have been around at the time of Christ.
Wow. So hay papeles que dicen que nació en los 1600, pero dicen que data desde pues el año que nació Cristo.
He has appeared many times throughout history, as recently as the 1970s.
Really?
And he always looks to be about 45 years old.
Pues las últimas apariciones datan de 1970 y siempre parece como que tiene unos 45 años.
He was known by and mentioned by many famous European and historical figures, including Casanova, Voltaire, King Louis XV, Catherine the Great, and George Washington.
Really? So, gente conocida y fiable, en teoría, ha dicho que le han visto, que le han conocido.
So, although his date of birth is unknown, Sandra, it is said that in the late 1600s, he was an accomplished alchemist turning metal into pure gold.
Ooh, so historias de alquimia, de convertir metales en oro puro.
So that was the late 1600s. From 1740 to 1780, he was kind of a celebrity, as much as you could be a celebrity in those days, and traveled extensively throughout Europe.
Wow, so en el siglo XVIII era como medio celebrity, era una figura muy conocida y viajaba por toda Europa.
And he never seemed to age. So that's
wow.
A long time we're talking about
that
here.
We're talking
40 years, and in those 40 years of his fame, he never seemed to age. Among the many astonishing abilities that he possessed, Sandra, are... He spoke 12 languages.
So hablaba 12 idiomas. Wow.
He could play the violin like a virtuoso.
Tocaba el violín como un virtuoso.
He was an accomplished painter.
Pintor.
Whenever he traveled, he set up an elaborate laboratory, presumably for his alchemy work.
Wow, so montaba el laboratorio ahí donde estuviera.
He was a man of great wealth with many bank accounts, though no one ever saw him work.
Wow, so tenía mucha riqueza y muchas cuentas bancarias, pero nadie le vio trabajar.
And this lends credence to the alchemy metal to gold theory.
How interesting.
He loved dining with friends because he enjoyed human company or companionship.
Uh-huh.
But he was rarely, if ever, seen to eat food in public.
Ooh, there's the vampire theory. So le encantaba comer con amigos por la compañía, pero no le veían comer nunca.
He subsisted, it was said, on a diet of oatmeal.
Oatmeal? Mm-hmm. They're very nutritious, but I don't know. So copos de avena.
For his friends, he would prescribe recipes to remove wrinkles or for dyeing hair.
Wow, okay, so tenía remedios antiarrugas y para teñir el pelo.
He was very ostentatious, Sandra. He wore clothes that were studded with gems.
Oh, llevaba trajes enjollados.
And he was, now listen to this. So he was, and it was said that he could create them and make small ones bigger and whatnot. He is linked to several secret societies, including Rosicrucians, Freemasons, Society of Asiatic Brothers, wow. Knights of Light, Illuminati, and the Templars.
Wow. So se le asocia con muchos grupos misteriosos, los masones, los templarios, and several others that I had never heard of.
Officially, Saint Germain died in 1784, but as we said, he's been seen up through the 20th century.
Wow. So oficialmente murió en 1784. 1784, pero se le ha visto.
Pero, right, he supposedly officially died in 1784. In 1785, he was seen in Germany with Anton Mesmer, the pioneer of hypnotism. So mesmerizing probably comes from Anton Mesmer.
Wow, so le vieron el año después de su muerte con Anton Mesmer.
And official records of Freemasonry show that Saint Germain was elected as their representative for a convention in 1785.
How could that be if he was dead? So le eligieron como representante de una conferencia. That's amazing, Colby.
After the Bastille was taken in the French Revolution in 1789, the Comtesse de Ademar said she had lengthy conversations with the Count of Saint Germain, and he told her things about France's immediate future.
Wow, so dice que le contó cosas del futuro inmediato de Francia tras la toma de la Bastilla.
In 1821, she wrote, I have seen Saint Germain again, and each time he looked to be no older than his mid-40s.
I get goosebumps hearing these stories.
Voltaire, the 18th century philosopher, best summed up the Count of Saint Germain when he said, he is a man who never dies and knows everything.
So Voltaire dijo que es un hombre que nunca muere y lo sabe todo. What a mystery,
That's
Colby.
Pretty interesting.
Very European.
You know, the one you're about to read, I think, is my favorite mystery right now.
You know, I can't believe I had never heard of this, but... Okay, it's the Voynich manuscript, all right, and it's named after the Polish-American antiquarian bookseller Wilfred M. Voynich, so un anticuario, un vendedor de libros. He acquired this manuscript in 1912, and you say, okay, well, what is this manuscript and what makes it so special? Well, it's a detailed 240-page book. All right, so 240 páginas. Some pages are missing, all right? And it's written in a language that is completely unknown, a language or script that is completely unknown. So un idioma que es totalmente desconocido. When you first told me about this, Colby, I was like, oh, maybe it's written in Basque, but there's no mention. So it's an unknown language. And... it was clearly written from left to right. So se escribió de izquierda a derecha. So that's how we write. And it has paragraphs and sometimes star or flower-like bullets on the left margin.
So bullet points.
Exactly. So tiene esos puntos para enunciar cosas, ¿no? Numerar cosas.
Yeah, there is a language, and I can't remember right now, that they say it kind of resembles.
Okay, so dicen que se parece un poco a algún idioma, but not exactly. So something interesting is that there's no obvious punctuation, so no tiene ni puntos ni comas, and no indications of any errors or corrections made at any place in the document. So again, it's a manuscript, so it was written by hand. Nothing is scratched out. There are no irregularities. It flows smoothly, and it gives the impression that the symbols were not enciphered. So no estaban encifrados los símbolos.
Yeah.
And there's no delay between the characters, which is what happens when a text is encoded.
Yeah, because you have to stop and think about it. It's not just, you're not naturally writing in your own language. You have to stop and think, okay, how do I say this in the code? What is this in the code?
Exactly. No, está escrito con fluidez, pues como la que escribiría alguien en su propio idioma.
Now, there have been several studies over the years, Sandra, mm-hmm. that said that it was real, it was a fake. For a long time, they said it was a fake, that they studied the language and there's no way it could be a real language. But the most recent study that was just published on it said it has elements of a real language.
Tiene los elementos de un idioma de verdad. Well, Colby, it's full of colorful drawings of strange diagrams, odd events, so sucesos extraños, and plants that don't match any known species. So hay imágenes de plantas que no son reconocidas en nuestro mundo. So people don't understand where these images came from. The original author remains unknown, but they've conducted carbon dating, and it's revealed that the pages were made sometime between 1404 and 1438. So, los estudios demuestran que data después de 1400. And it's been called the world's most mysterious manuscript. So, they think it was a pharmacopoeia, which is a book that contains directions for the identification of medicines, like plants and things, and that it was published by, well, a pharmaceutical society. Okay, that's normally what a pharmacopoeia is. But typically, this happened in medieval times and early modern medicine. But, well, many of the pictures of the herbs and plants hint that it might have been a textbook for an alchemist.
You know, one of the most popular theories, because none of the plants look like plants that are found on Earth, that it was brought by an alien, that it's from another world.
Well, they're astronomical diagrams, and that's what makes people believe this. And also, well, those strange plants, like you said, that they're an alien origin. So they agree that it's unlikely that it's a hoax. So la gente está de acuerdo en que no es una farsa. So a hoax es una farsa. Because of the time, money, and detail that would have been required to make it.
Yeah. So you know what? It's passed through many hands over the years, and now it was donated to Yale. So it's at Yale right now, and people are still studying it after all these years. And so they have not deciphered the language. There are some theories that it might be, maybe it was brought by the Spaniards, and that it was, but that would make it older than they initially thought.
Okay, so on one of the voyages.
Yeah, that it was written by some Indians, that it's an Indian, like an Aztec Indian type language. And then there's some other theories that it's an Asian, some type of Asian language. But again, I think they said 80 or 85% of the plants in the book, depicted in the book, are not found on Earth. There are some that are or are similar to. And then there's the theory that it might be some kind of code.
Okay, que puede ser algún tipo de código.
That, for example, if you see a long green leaf, that it's actually talking about a short brown leaf or something like that. So it's a way to tell people how to mix different potions and chemicals and things like this without giving away the secrets of the compound.
Ooh, Colby, fascinating.
Very mysterious stuff.
I want to know more about this Voynich manuscript.
All right, Sandra, we are coming right back in just a minute.